So it's currently morning. I didn't expect to get much sleep last night, and I didn't. We just picked up some breakfast, and Clint's been eating like an animal. Guess I can't blame him, though. But I don't want to get off topic. He followed up by describing a rough layout of the world beyond that island. By his account, oceans made up about 85% of the surface. There were only two continents. Well, there used to be. But one was essentially annihilated and made unlivable by a previous world war. There were also islands scattered throughout ones like Dusk Blue. The two remaining continents were known as Neo-Civitas and Heaven's Curse. I'll discuss the latter first. Clint estimated that he'd spent around 2 months there. That's another story. To put it simply, it resembled an apocalyptic shit show, with the vast majority of it being a desert wasteland. If you thought Dusk Blue sounded bad, this shit was something else entirely, Clint explained. Apparently, the life expectancy of children born there was around 6 human years. The places where people lived ranged from lawless zones controlled by warlords to totalitarian fortresses and everything in between. It had a total population of about 17 billion living in the area, about twice the size of Russia. And those were only what we could consider to be humans. The place was also filled with some of the most incomprehensibly horrific things he'd ever seen. A place that wasn't occupied by a majority of humans was simply referred to as Oblivion. If you went into those places alone, you weren't going to last long. Now, the creatures that dwelled within Oblivion were a bit tough to explain. Clint's experiences with them were limited. However, he'd heard that people had stopped trying to label them all. There were simply too many. He told me about some of the more infamous ones. Harbingers. These were giant winged monstrosities with sharp spikes protruding out of every inch of their body. You could barely see their skin, and even the heads were mostly covered. These things were massive, about the size of a large shuttle bus. It was rumored that the spikes coming out of their skin put them in constant agonizing pain. Because of this, they were in constant states of rage, slaughtering anything that moved. They were called harbingers because whenever one arrived, many others were soon to follow. That meant unavoidable mass-scale death and destruction. These things weren't easy to kill, and the people had to prepare. Butcher Knights. Nobody really knows what these are. There was a theory floating around that they were members of an ancient order of knights that had been condemned by some otherworldly being. They were now forced to roam Heaven's Curse for eternity, searching for human flesh to eat. And yeah, they ate people. In appearance, they were 10 feet tall, humanoid, covered head to toe in crude black armor, resembling that of a traditional knight. Upon close inspection, it almost seemed as if the armor was welded to the skin, which appeared to be rotting. They attacked human outposts with extremely large, rusted pikes and axes. If the initial blow didn't kill you, the ensuing infection surely would. Fighting them one-on-one wasn't an option, as they could easily overpower multiple humans at once. Steam cannons had to be used to take them out. Weeping Infernos. These were also humanoid in nature. Despite being always covered in fire, they rode on top of unidentifiable creatures. They almost looked like horses, except for the fact that they had 6 legs and they ran at a ludicrous speeds. It's unclear if the rider was physically attached to the creature, as they seem to have their own legs, but have never been seen to dismount. The way they kill is actually not what you'd think. While the constant stream of flames they burst out of their bodies was certainly a cause for concern, a bigger problem was their persistent, ungodly shrieks. If you get too close to them, your brain would eventually explode. That's where they got their names from. The Hunter. This was a rare one. People were unsure if there was only one of these, or if there were more. This stems from the fact that it only ever appeared by itself. But that didn't mean it was easy to deal with. Supposedly, this thing was seemingly indestructible, until proven otherwise, that is. But so far, nobody's made a dent in it. However, it was only really pursuing one thing, the strongest entity in the surrounding area. Somehow, it could sense them, and that meant that the more settlements would try and protect their more capable fighters, the more people would die when the Hunter tried to get to them. Eventually, communities would just give them up and hand them over whenever it came around. They'd fight each other, and the Hunter would always win. Most reports of this appearance may have been falsified, since so little people have actually seen it. However, the most agreed-upon one was a being more than triple the size of a butcher knight. It had no legs, but about 12 arms that it used to attack and move. Its hands were large, covered in caustic liquid. It could grab humans and simultaneously crush and dissolve them in seconds. It also appeared to have no face, just a large mouth filled with sharp black teeth on its torso. Ultimately, these only scratched the surface. See, Heaven's Curse was like the ocean, mostly unexplored, and vast majority of the creatures dwelling within it were still undiscovered. This was probably good. However, these weren't the only things that the inhabitants had to worry about. There was also a perplexing phenomenon that seemed to plague everybody who lived there. Nobody could explain it away, nobody could identify the source, and nobody even knew what to call it. They just accepted it. A good parallel for this in our reality would be the glitches in the Matrix that some people experience. On Heaven's Curse, you could be simply walking around before getting disoriented for a few seconds. And when you come to your senses, you find yourself standing outside the civilization you were just in, out in oblivion. People also claim to see things that weren't there, hear things that didn't have a source, and be having conversations before realizing that there was nobody in front of them. One of the more extreme cases was times where everybody around you would stop in place, have all their heads twist to look directly at you, and then their lips would stretch ear to ear in the most horrific grin you've ever seen. After a couple of seconds, everything would go back to normal. Nobody would say that they'd ever even remember doing so. This happened to Clint once. You may be wondering how there could still be a constant population of like 17 billion, considering all of this. Well, there was one thing that people living out there didn't have to worry about. That was sustenance. Now, Clinton admitted that the food that they had to eat wasn't very good, but it was abundant. The bark on the trees was nutritiously dense. Rain came regularly and didn't have to be boiled to drink, and various, albeit strange-looking root vegetables could be grown almost everywhere, with shortages being unheard of. Additionally, these medium-sized insects called salvators were rampant all around, but they were never a nuisance, never seemed to spread disease, and if cooked, could be used as a great source of protein. That's why there was always so many people. Children were being bred at a torrid rate. Emotional connections to your offspring wasn't really a thing, and the ones that survived attacks by the oblivion creatures would be trained to deal with the subsequent assaults. Since food wasn't an issue, the more there were, the better chances a settlement would survive. However, the population always seemed to be able to even itself out. The climate was also favorable. While the north and south ends of the continent had extreme temperatures, nobody really lived there. In fact, nobody knows what lives there. The rest of it could probably be compared to Australia. It's pretty hot, but still livable. There's no seasons. The sky was perpetually covered in what looked like an orange haze, so sunburn wasn't an issue. And with that said, everybody still wanted to get the hell out of there. The quality of life was still absolute shit. They all wanted to reach Neo-Civitas, which they nicknamed Heaven's Promise. And that was pretty much impossible, given the fact that they were separated by as much ocean as the geography would allow. Now, Clinton had never been actually inside of Neo-Civitas. He'd only heard about it and read descriptions. Supposedly, it was only a tenth the size of Heaven's Curse, and it was named after the only city on the entire continent. Clint said that a physical description of the place would be akin to Manhattan on steroids. A megacity. It was a host to a population of 275 million. It was a continuous stretch of brilliant buildings and skyscrapers that lit up the night. It was also a functioning society. People had jobs, they could start families, they could engage in recreational activities. Nobody had to worry about anything beyond shit like taxes and public opinion. That sounded like the rat race all over again, Clint explained. While the area outside the city limits were still somewhat hostile, it was nowhere near the extent of Heaven's Curse, or anywhere else for that matter. And besides, there was a monumental metal-based wall, about 400 meters tall, surrounding the entire place. There were also a heavily armored military personnel called Apex Officers guarding it. In fact, a lot of it was comprised of the enhanced soldiers guarding Paradise X. These two places actually had an agreement where a portion of the ex-soldiers would be flown from Dusk Blue to Neo-Civitas in exchange for firearms. And yes, they were the only ones who had access to air travel. They were also widely believed to be sole producers of guns and ammunition. Resources were scarce in this world, and most of them were on Neocivitas. The few other resource-rich islands around the world were essentially picked dry by recon teams sent by the government. This was the world's only superpower. They called all the shots, they went unopposed in doing so. However, there was one thing that they did have to worry about. You see, there was one thing that Neocivitas had in common with everywhere else. The sky. It was always cloudy. Nobody could come up with a tangible explanation of why. It was always just like that.
Well, that's just what those people think,
Clint remarked quickly. Strangely, he didn't elaborate on that. So I really noticed how weird he'd been acting the whole time he'd been telling me this. There was an increasing urgency in his tone. Anyhow, he went on. Apparently, there was a legend of sorts that had permeated every community all around the world. When the day comes when the clouds finally part, true Armageddon will soon come to fruition, and nobody could stop it. Now, I'd been so caught up in this, I had forgotten I actually had to work that day. My boss had texted me in the morning telling me I had to come in that day for just a few hours. I was already late. Shit, I told Clint. Look, I gotta run to work real quick. Just stay here, all right? Don't go anywhere. I'll bring back some pizza or something. He responded almost instantly. Yeah, do what you gotta do. I'll be here. He said this in the same urgent tone that he'd been using before. However, I didn't think anything of it. And I'm currently at work now. I can't really focus on anything. There's be too many things that Clint just left unexplained. I just came back and he's gone. I somewhat expected this. It seemed that he took a bunch of perishable rations, a few sets of my clothes, a laptop, and some cash. However, I did find this in the kitchen. It was an old, crusty journal covered in dirt and bloodstains. There was also a sticky note attached to it. This is what it read. I'm sorry, James. You've always been of the few people that I can actually bear talking to. Maybe you'll understand eventually. This journal should answer some of the questions that you still have. In the meantime, there's something that I need to do. Goodbye for now. Clint. P.S. I'll pay you back sometime. You know I will.
I smiled at that.
It was true. He'd always kept his word. Deep down, I knew that his stay here wasn't going to last long. He just wasn't that kind of guy. Whatever he's doing, I hope he succeeds. In the meantime, looks like I'm going to have some reading to do. Let's see what this is really all about. Hey again, my posts seem to be a bit sporadic. Work's got me on my heels, you know how it is. And as much as I want answers, I also need to eat. So nevertheless, I started reading the journal. I list the names of the people Clint arrived with before I start typing the rest of this out. The ones who were still alive at the beginning of the first entry, that is. Just to make it less confusing. So there was Clint and Rust, of course. And then Duke, the MMA fighter. Lauren, the archaeologist. Travis, the drifter. Christian, the discharged soldier. Hawkins, the cosmologist. And Kaginori, the thrill seeker. Anyway. Here we go.
Entry 1. I thought I'd write down my thoughts, as well as my significant events while I'm here. Now, I'm not sure who this is for, or who's going to read it, but I might as well do this. My name is Clint Rockwell, and I'm currently in some strange world that isn't Earth. When I get here, well, that's a bit too much to explain. I've been on Dusk Blue, the island where we first landed on, for about 2 months now. That is assuming the time passes the same here as it does on Earth. And I think it does. Close enough, anyway. Hawkins estimates the time between days here is around 23 hours and 48 minutes. I shit you not. The guy sat there and counted the seconds one day. He's pretty much gone crazy at this point. Can't really blame him, though. This must be fucking insane for him. Besides that, everyone's been pretty nice around here. All seem to be genuinely good people. Once you get past the cultural differences, that is. Apparently a handshake here means war, but I don't know. Maybe there's something wrong with me. For the first week, I was amazed by this place. But after that, shit kind of fell into a routine again. The satisfaction came from making this discovery has been dwindling. It's just day after day of manual labor, eating gruel, and sitting around.
The thing I didn't realize, nobody ever goes outside this place unless they deem it a direct threat worthy intervening in. Hell, the only reason they bothered saving us was because we were leading the stalkers directly toward them. There's really nothing to do here. However, the story I hear from the elders is pretty interesting. For example, some time ago they found a dead body lying outside the settlement walls. Not wanting to stink up the place, some guy carried it away and threw it into some foliage. That night they heard somebody yelling at around the same place they found the body. When they checked it out, it was the same dead guy from earlier, except he was alive. Didn't have a scratch on him. They didn't let him in, obviously. You see, while shit like this would encourage some people to stay within the safer confines of the settlement, it just doesn't have the same effect on me. Shit like this makes me want to get out there. Made me want to go explore, and I realize, we almost died on the way here. But we were also unprepared. With people who know their way around, it could work out. You can't wave a piece of meat in front of a lion and expect it to stay in the cage. Alright, that was dumb as hell, and I wish that I didn't write that down, but I don't have an eraser right now, so I guess that's just staying in. But maybe I'll figure something out. Entry 2. An opportunity arose just now. One of the guards here, Grillo, approached me yesterday. Apparently, a convoy from Paradise X is coming around tomorrow to pick up any enhanced children. There aren't actually any here. This is his plan. As soon as they can, we would tell them that we have some. We would lead them into one of the cabins and ambush them inside, but somebody else took the drivers. I asked him how the hell we were going to do that, since they had guns. We do too, he responded with a toothy grin. That's what I realized. We did, didn't we? Apparently, Paradise X goes off the assumption that nobody at any settlement possesses firearms, since gunpowder is pretty much unavailable on the whole island. The only reason Paradise X has them is because a trade deal they do with some other place, or something similar. Now, I've never done something like this, and I don't know if I really feel comfortable doing so, but it seems like the only way I'm going to get out of here. Still, I'm not killing anybody. Grillo also asked me not to tell Slade, as it wouldn't go down well with him because of past incidents. Entry 3. Grillo and I worked it out. He's got two other guards in on this, and I've convinced Duke, Christian, and Kaginori. It didn't take much. They all were itching to get out of here as well. However, Lauren wasn't so sure about it. Maybe she'll come around. Rust said fuck no when I brought it up, and I'm pretty sure Hawkins is actually going insane because he just ignored everything I said. As for Travis, well, he actually seems pretty happy here. I saw him smile for the first time when a little girl made him a wooden necklace. I'm not going to bother him. All I know is that this is happening, and no matter the outcome, at least I've done something few others have. Entry 4. I don't know if I could gauge what happened as a success. Still, they came out of it pretty unscathed. As for my no-kill rule, those Paradise X motherfuckers were horrendous. As soon as they arrived in their three-vehicle convoy, they started causing shit. Some of them started taunting the townsfolk, while others swept the cabins. I counted 9 of them in total. They could hit a boiling point when one of them started groping a woman. That's when everything went to shit. I understood why Grillo was so adamant that we do this now. He was holding in some pent-up rage for sure. When we saw this, he stormed out of the cabin where we were going to hold the ambush and he shot the guy down. He really wasn't expecting it. He took out 2 more before rushing back in, sporting a nasty bullet wound on his thigh. I'm not sure why he was so good at aiming. He never held a gun before. What happened next went by quick. In a life-or-death situation, all reservations you have about mortality go out the window. I took shooting lessons as part of my training beforehand, so I managed to take out a few of them myself. I didn't feel anything when I did so. The guns were looking pretty good until Christian blasted one of the soldiers point-blank with a shotgun. He barely flinched. He was enhanced. Fucking hell, I remember Grillo shouting. He had told us that there was no chance they'd send one of them with the convoy. They were too important. Well, that was bullshit, wasn't it? This guy was on a rampage, picking people up and slamming them on the ground. Every punch that he threw was fatal. Slade had come out at one point to challenge him, but he was dismantled easily. I saw him give a look of somber disappointment at Grillo before going limp. The whole plan was going downhill until Rust approached and shouted at the guy, "Come here, you fucking pussy," was all that he said. I had no idea what his plan was. It is until he took out a grenade. And I guess he'd been hiding it. He took the pin off, chucked it at the guy, and watched it bounce off of him. I guess Paradise X didn't use grenades because the guy just scoffed and started towards Rust, and at this point, Christian had already silently been gesturing everybody away from the whole situation. The grenade exploded right as the guy stepped over it. Everything fell silent for a while. That's when we heard groaning. He was still alive, but he seemed to be incapacitated. A bunch of guys followed up, tossing him out of the settlement walls, and I guess all the commotion had attracted something in the jungle because we heard him screaming soon after. After that, we stayed around to help for a while, rebuilding, tending to any injuries. The least we could do. I had to thank Rust for what he did. That guy really did have balls. When I did it, he just looked at me like I was insane. It was a fair judgment in retrospect. That was reckless, kid, he told me. I just nodded and I asked him if he had changed his mind about coming with us. I doubted it, but it was worth a shot. He looked around the village for a second before sighing and shaking his head. No. No, I have some work to do, and I don't think I'll be able to get it done. Wherever you're going. He patted me on the shoulder before walking away. Good luck, kid. Hope you find what you're looking for. Now, I don't know why, but that sentence filled me with a sense of melancholy. I guess it got me wondering what that really was. What was I actually after? Maybe I'm not so sure yet. Maybe that was just more reason to go and find out. Before we left, I watched Travis consoling a group of children. I'm really not so sure if us landing on the island did any good for this place. Seems scared now, more than before. So whatever. There's no changing it now. We checked out the vehicle after, and I'm not really sure what kind they were. Guess I wouldn't have known anyway. It sort of resembled an armored, lifted jeep. Eventually, we figured out how to get them going. At this point, it was me, Grillo, Christian, Duke, Kaginori, another guard named Novix, and Lauren. She changed her mind. Could have been for a lot of reasons, but she didn't tell me. Let's just go, was all she said when I inquired about it. We're all following Grillo now. Apparently, he knows where to go. He also stated that he had a plan once we got there. But there was an obvious hint of doubt wavering in his voice when he claimed this. We'll see what happens, I suppose. This is as far as I've gotten for now. I'm not really sure what to make of this, but my perception of Clint Rockwell sure has been dynamic. I don't know what to make of this guy anymore. But I'll post what I can. Bye for now. Entry 5. I'm not sure what the hell's going on right now. I'm at the back of the convoy with Lauren and Kaginori, who's at the wheel. We were driving fine. Before we left, Grillo told us not look at anything outside the vehicle, and especially not to fire off any shots. There was a 90% chance it wouldn't kill anything. I almost broke that rule when I caught a glimpse of something pressed against the window right beside me. It had pale skin and this wide mouth that covered half of its face. I just shuddered and ignored it. Everyone else seemed to have the same idea. This was a while ago. However, Grillo just stopped completely and nobody knows why. You see, the road, if you could call it that, is extremely narrow, and he's blocking everything in front of us. Fuck, maybe he'll get going soon. Being out here at night is pretty horrific. I swear, it's been at least 10 minutes, and he still hasn't moved an inch. Kaginori's getting pissed. He wants to go and see what's going on. Lauren's trying to convince him that it won't end well, since Grillo hasn't even stepped out. But he seems adamant. Be honest, I'm close to going to check myself. Shit. Duke just came out in front of us, holding a rifle. He's walking towards something in front where Grillo has stopped. He's yelling at it now. He sounds pissed. What the hell's going on? Oh, he's raised a weapon. Grillo just stepped out and tackled him to the ground. They're wrestling now. Kagino has run out to see what's going on. I need to know as well. I'll write down what happens later. Entry 6. Well, that was fucked up. I got there just in time to witness Duke putting Grillo into a rear naked choke. While he was gasping for air, Duke got up and started shouting again. Grillo was begging us to stop him in between labored breaths. That's when I saw what was in front of the vehicle. It was Duke's copy. The one that we'd seen during that first day that we landed on the island. Although maybe it wasn't the same one. Duke was hysterical. "What the fuck do you want from me?" he screamed at it. His copy just stood there, staring at him blankly, almost taunting him. "Don't let him touch it!" Grillo shouted at us from behind. I didn't know what to do in that moment, neither did Kaginori. I could see Novex running up from behind us, but he seemed hesitant to do anything. We just remained passive observers. Duke was starting to get close to the thing, very close. It looked as if he was about to throw a punch any second. I turned to see Grillo fishing a pistol out of the vehicle. "What the hell are you doing?" I asked him. He didn't respond. Instead, he just pointed the gun directly at Duke. "Don't fucking do it!" he pleaded. Duke just ignored everything. That's when he raised a fist. Grillo got the shot off just in time. Duke's blood spattered everywhere as he fell onto the ground. Nobody moved after that. We all just stared in anticipation, waiting for his copy's next move. I saw Kaginori slowly inching his way back to the vehicle. The thing stayed put, but just stared at Duke's body. But its facial expression was different. It looked almost disappointed. That's when its body started changing. It was hard to explain. I just remember it looking surreal. Its skin seemed to be bubbling and it was growing taller, and eventually it started walking away backwards at a speed no human should be able to walk. As soon as it was out of sight, Grillo screamed at us to get back in the vehicle, and we obliged. That's where we are now, driving away. No one's asking us what happened, but I don't really feel like reliving it. Kaginori hasn't said a word. I'll ask Grillo about it later, I guess. Entry 7. We finally stop near a clearing. Grillo has gotten out of the vehicle and is signaling us to do the same. I can't tell you how long it's been, but I'm cramping up. I eventually told Lauren what we saw. She had no response to it. She's just been staring at her lap. Not really sure why we aren't driving anymore, but I definitely see lights in the distance. He must be going the rest of the way on foot. I'm going to talk to Grillo now, see what he says. Alright. It seems he doesn't know much about it either. He's only been told what to do upon direct encounters with it. Apparently the number one rule is you cannot initiate contact with it under any circumstances. As long as you're in its peripheral view, it can imitate your appearance perfectly. It'll also never attack you. Given that, you don't touch it first, or take any actions that may harm it, like running it over. You're just supposed to walk away from it. I asked him what was supposed to happen once you've touched it. His response was short and cryptic. That sets it free. We can't have that. I tried asking what the hell that was supposed to mean, but he changed the subject. "We gotta walk the rest of the way," he said. "Can't pull up in the convoy. Grab all the weapons." That was disconcerting, to say the least. But it looked like I wasn't getting any further answers out of him. I just did what he told me to do. We started heading towards the clearing. Through the brush, we could see the outer limits of the city. There was a big wall looking like stone spanning the space. There was also a large gate surrounded by guards. I could see some buildings peeking out from the top. I'd nearly forgotten the sound of everyday city bustle at this point. It was a glimpse back into the old world. That's when Grillo dropped the bomb on us. He had no fucking plan. Apparently, he actually used to be a guard for Paradise X. However, he got kicked out for reporting the rampant misconduct of his co-workers participating in. Yeah. Looked like this place was beyond corrupt. The other guards would beat, harass, and rape their way through all the city with no accountability. He got sick of it. He only came here for revenge. He was about to kill as many of them as he could before they stopped him.
Never had a gun before, he said, with a twisted grin. They won't see it coming. And look, Grillo's a good guy, but this was madness. He told us that we could go back, but he wouldn't hold it against us. The problem was, we didn't know how to get back to the settlement. Novex had a similar story to Grillo. He sure as hell wasn't helping us either. It's like we could either try and brave it in the shitstorm of a jungle, or hope for the best in the city. The shit's looking bleak. I'm listening to Grillo and Novex discuss the plan of action right now. Everybody else looks horrified. Kaginori's got his face buried in his hands, and Christian's praying near a tree, and I think I saw a tear roll down Lauren's eye. But I seem to feel nothing. Now that I think about it, I'm actually kind of excited. Is this just blatant denial of my situation, or am I actually going insane? Who knows? The best thing I can do right now is focus on not getting shot. Apparently, they don't use the enhanced guards outside the walls. Again, they're too important. However, it seems like Grillo doesn't always know what he's talking about. All we can do is hope for the best. The plan itself was simple. Novex would put on a Paradise X uniform he took from the convoy and walk towards the guards. If he didn't get immediately shot down, he'd open fire. That's when the rest of us would come in. With all the intention on him, he'd take care of the others. After that, we'd use the guards' keys to unlock the gate and wreak further havoc. Now, I'm not planning to simply walk around and slaughter random guards. I wouldn't last a minute that way. I'll hide somewhere, let it cool off and explore the city. And after that, who knows? Not like I have much time to think right now. Grillo's counting down already. He's got 9 fingers up. 8. 7. Fucking hell. Entry 8. I don't know how I keep getting so lucky. I got skimmed by 2 bullets, but that was it. I'm hiding behind a dumpster in an alley right now with Christian and Lauren. I don't know where Kaginori is, but I know that Novex was shot dead by the guards as soon as he walked out there. We managed to get rid of the rest of them while they were busy with him, and I remember seeing Grillo take a bullet to the shoulder, Kaginori in the thigh, one destroy Christian's ear. But this time, Grillo was right. None of those damn super soldiers was there. However, we were pretty much out of ammo. It didn't take long before we heard shouting coming from inside the walls, and after we unlocked the gates, we were met with a large statue of some man with a hook hand. A bunch of civilians started staring at us as well. Here's the thing. I expected the quality of life in Paradise X to be at least decent, however, it looks horrendous. Everyone had bags under their eyes. Their tattered clothes nearly hung to their skinny frames. They all looked like disconnected zombies. The city itself looked like a post-nuclear Gotham. There were tons of skyscrapers, but they were foreboding and dirty. There were destitute buildings lining the place, and every street seemed to be cracked. It was filled with what I assumed to be roving police squads, and the amount of people sleeping on the sidewalks was both astonishing and disturbing at the same time. I swear I saw someone getting in the shit kicked out of them in plain view of everybody, and nobody intervened. Not even the police. That's probably because they were running towards us. However, they didn't have guns. Only what looked to be batons, knives. That's when Grillo went all out. He emptied the last clip of the rifle into a cluster of police before using it as a melee weapon. He was hurling loud, aggressive expletives at them while he did this. God, he really hated this place, didn't he? I needed to get the hell out of here. The last I saw of Grillo was him getting picked up and tossed into a windshield by an enhanced. I ran away from that. The whole situation until I was about to pass out. Civilians kept looking at us, but they didn't seem to give a shit. And at this point, I still had 3 bullets left. I looked back to see Christian and Lauren not far behind. They also looked to be on the verge of puking, and I didn't see where Kaginori went. That's where we are now. Hiding behind this filthy dumpster, trying to catch our breaths. I don't know what we're going to do next. I don't know what we're going to do at all. And I've killed so many people. But to be honest, I don't really mind. Entry 9. Shit. A couple of cops are walking by us right now. We decided to hide directly in the dumpster, just to play it safe. My eyes were watering. Lauren just silently gags. I smell something like I've never experienced before. I'm not sure what I can do. I have a gun and they don't. Could probably jump out
force them to give up their weapons. Maybe I will.
Wait.
I just noticed that one of the cops has a tattoo on his forearm.
Yes. Could it be?
Holy shit, it is.
It's the Chicago Cubs logo.
It's motherfuckers from Earth.